Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit DiscoverSouthCarolina.com.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at AbilityChiro.com.
Oh, the car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered. Like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches. But there aren't, right?
Right. Because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
Just moving down at about 10 feet into it, everything just went completely white and I went snowblind. And I remember at that moment dropping down, grabbing the rope and assessing the situation. Just thinking, I'm at the highest point in the world. I'm completely blind. No one's coming to get me.
Team Never Quit. Team Never Quit. Team Never Quit Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ Podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit Podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit Podcast. As always, thank you guys for listening and watching, and please don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button wherever you're getting this show. So today, before we get to our two special guests, let's kick it off with our weekly Patreon question. And this week, we have got, if you were going to win the lottery, what is your one splurge item?
Wow.
Once. Beach house. I want a beach house.
Dude, I'm about to go with the private plane.
Yeah?
I think that'd be probably the move right there.
Yeah, I think that's going to have to be the move because everybody I talk to, even I hear presidents say this. It's like, hey, one thing they miss is Air Force One. And it just makes travel so much easier. And
yeah. Like a full-time private driver.
And if you have one of those... People who have a beach house will let you use it because, you know, you could pony the plane over.
But do you have the whole crew with the plane?
Yeah, or? I think we should go big.
Yeah.
Like a 7-7.
Gulfstream or something? Or bigger. Yeah,
I mean, I think we should go the jumbo jet size.
Oh, like my gosh.
Austin Powers.
You've got a big lottery. Yep.
Yeah. Well, I'm
going to put some like spinners Drake's on plane.
Spend the whole thing on the plane. That'd probably be my one with you, bro.
You know, I might buy like an old... aircraft carrier and just put it off the coast of California and then sink it.
That's a yacht. Oh, sink it. Yeah. I was like, turn that sucker into a yacht. You'd be the only dude out there with that. Yeah. And you can land your plane on it.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
This is I can land my plane on it.
Nice.
How about you?
Yeah, I would do a big yacht or a second home. Yeah.
A yacht.
Near the beach.
I'm changing my answer from a beach house to a yacht.
Yeah. Wow. It's a toss-up.
Yeah.
Some of those mega yachts, man.
It's nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just buy like a Carnival cruise ship and redo the whole thing on the inside of it.
Like three huge bedrooms.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all it's on there.
Yeah, honestly, I think I'm going yacht too, because I could just live out in the water, just hopping from island to island and having no schedule, doing whatever I wanted. That'd be the best possible move. Plus, whenever you're not using it, you can just run it out and make more money.
Yeah.
Yeah, true.
Just chasing that perfect weather.
So we got four boats.
Yeah.
And a plane.
Yeah.
And we're sinking.
Perfect.
Mine,
so we got a diving option.
Yes.
That's so funny.
I don't know if they need to do that. That would be something cool to dive on, though. An aircraft carrier at the bottom. I don't know that we have. I haven't heard of that.
Yeah.
But how big that thing is.
Probably put it pretty deep out there.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about? That would be cool.
That would be cool.
That would be real cool.
All right. So let's hear your story.
Yeah, all right. Thanks for coming on, brother. I appreciate it, man. I can't wait to introduce you to the team. To get a little backstory on you, man. Where were you born? Where'd you come from?
Well, I was born in California, but pretty much since the age of six, grew up in Southern Oregon in the mountains. So in the 80s, small town, turning 51 here in a month. So about your age, just older.
Yeah. What about your mom and dad?
Yep. They're there. My mom's passed since, but my dad's still there.
Okay. What'd they do growing up?
My mom was a mom, and my dad was a contractor.
Check.
Yeah.
Any siblings?
Yep. I'm the youngest. I have an older brother and middle sister, older sister.
What'd they get into?
My sister got her master's degree and is working in, what is her job, like HR? Mm-hmm. And my brother is just working the different jobs.
What'd you grow up doing?
I was playing sports. So, you know, there's no technology back then.
It's back in the 1900s, man. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was way back then. A lot of just outdoors, playing soccer, golf. But when we played golf, you know, we packed our bags full of wine coolers.
I remember. We're the same age.
Just a lot of outdoors things. So, you know, I was wired to just be outdoors and, you know, everything wasn't perfect at home, so there was a lot of time just being alone and, you know, just getting out there and kind of finding myself.
At what age did you start climbing?
I was always in the mountains climbing, but more professionally, like high altitude mountaineering.
Yeah.
That's after I got out of the Navy. So got out in 99. And got my master's, was working in high tech.
Well, let's back that up a little bit. What got you into the military?
I come from a military family.
All right.
So it wasn't foreign to me. I did have opportunities for like scholarships for soccer and art, random. But just was ready to go see the world, not to just sit behind, you know, books. And
what got you spun off by the Navy?
If I go Top Gun, I think everyone goes there. But
hey.
But it's a unique because it wasn't necessarily the F-14s and all that. It was the rescue swimmers picking up goose. Like, I thought that was pretty badass.
Yeah.
And that's what I ended up doing.
Dude, Top Gun changed a lot of our lives, man. We had great commercials back then. I felt like recruiting was really good.
Yeah, they're struggling right now.
They are. We are. I guess it's us, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of, 'cause I remember Rambo came out, so you wanted to be a Green Beret.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was a badass. And then Schwarzenegger had Commando.
Mm.
And then when Top Gun came out, switched over to pilots. But I remember that rescue swimmer scene.
Yeah. Yeah, and even Charlie Sheen, your hero.
I'm a Charlie Sheen SEAL. I'm going to tell you my whole look, my whole attitude off of that dude.
But it was, for the time, it was a fun movie. It was motivating. Like, almost all of my graduating class in rescue swimmer school took the end test. But it was 93, so you had to fulfill a couple years before you could actually go over. And then a few of them did, and a lot of us got out.
So what year did you go in again?
93.
So boot camp at Great Lakes?
No, Orlando.
Oh, it was?
Yeah.
And then where'd you go after you graduated boot camp?
Pensacola.
Okay, straight.
Yep.
And how long is that rescue swimmer school?
So air crew is like 5 weeks, rescue swimmers four, and then you go to your ACE school. And then SEER.
So you still got to have a job, even though you're the rescue swimmer.
Yeah. The whole thing is just less than 2 years after you go to the FRS and fleet replacement, you're flying in the helicopters, learning all that. So.
And why do they do that? Just in case you get washed out?
Yeah. Just like anything.
Anything else, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, we're doing everything in the helicopter. Like, we're rescue swimmers, but we're also anti-submarine warfare. We're combat search and rescue, aerial gunners. You figure everything that the helicopter does, that's what we did.
Right.
I think you're our first rescue swimmer that we've ever had on.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should have more.
Where'd you get assigned to? Yeah. I know a bunch of. Where'd you get assigned the first time?
North Island.
Yeah. You like that?
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. Met Joanne in the hot tub.
That's where y'all met.
After I got back from the Gulf, yeah.
Right on. And what did you do?
So I was born in Huntington Beach, so Southern California is where I grew up. I grew up, though, in Paris, California.
Okay.
And then went to San Diego State for college for my undergrad in psychology. And we were in townhomes next to each other. And yes, there was a hot tub and a pool in the middle, and that's where we met.
Great love story.
Huh. Yeah.
Was it love at first sight, or did you have to court her for a while?
I'm going for it.
No.
It's in the book.
No.
Okay.
So. No.
It's cool. We're all friends here. We're family.
Tell us.
So. It's so embarrassing, though.
Yeah, but it's a means to an end, and it worked out. And this is not for anyone out there to do this, but it does work.
Oh gosh, it did not work. Okay, continue.
So me and a buddy went down. We had, Navy buddy, and we had a pitcher of beer each because we had a kegerator, karaoke machine, and a spotlight that overlooked the hot tub.
From our balcony.
We're like, man, it's packed with girls. It's packed with girls. We go down there and the water's like leveled out. There's so many girls in there. And someone asks, what do you do? And you know, when you're in the Navy, you don't want to tell anyone you're in the Navy.
I remember.
So I said, I'm a plumber. I got up. Ass crack hanging
is that your
out.
Go-to?
Yeah. And everyone's like, oh my gosh, you're so funny. And Joanna's like, you're a jerk. I'm like, whoa, I like this one. So the rest is history.
Hilarious.
Yeah. No, thankfully, then we saw each other like a couple days later. There was like a house party or something. And so, yeah. So then I actually got to talk to him and.
And you realized and he started. Wasn't.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, I'll give you a second chance.
Oh my God.
Many second chances.
Did you tell him what you did for a living? Being a psychologist?
I was in school for psychology at the time. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, you didn't know that night when you were a plumber, but yeah.
No, you worked at the Gap back then, which I thought was so cool.
You're like, you can get me a discount.
Yeah. All right. So, what was your, how many years did you do in the military?
6.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Check. How many deployments?
2.
What's your takeaway from those?
It was wedged between wars, which was good. But every flight is some sort of traumatic event. You never know what you're launching for. We would deploy SEALs, middle of the night. Never know what you guys are doing out there and, exfil, infill, and, shooting up tanks in the Kuwait. Doing some aerial practice, work with EODs, drop them on boats to take down or whatever. And so it was better than an alternative that most will never experience.
Yeah.
But there is when you're deployed for 6 months at a time, it's tough.
It was still 6 months, right?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, because we're in that time right now, after the war, in between the wars, because the storms and the shields came out, and then you had that gap.
Mm-hmm.
I see it as, it's a great time too, because when you're not in the wars, man, you're always doing something. Mm-hmm. You're training, you're out doing something.
Yeah.
But then obviously you're a wartime environment or a wartime operator, so you want to be in that.
Yeah,
and then
weird,
you got
yeah.
storms and shields on either side of you. So it can be tough, man.
Yeah. Yeah, but I knew, like I got back from the first deployment, met Joanna, and then had to deploy again. And yeah. I was like, now I was seeing it from a family perspective and, we weren't married or anything, but I could tell like kind of where my heart was going and I was ready to get out.
After 6, that's what did it?
Yeah.
Yeah. A good woman will do that, man.
Yeah.
Right on. All right. So you get out, then what?
We got married. Took us 6 years because I had to grow up a little bit.
We both came from kind of dysfunction and chaos. And so we were trying to figure it out before we got married. And
Yeah. And then we moved up to the Pacific Northwest, got our master's degrees, and I was working in the high tech, worked for Expedia when it was part of Microsoft, and, you know, just sitting behind a desk. It's weird when you go from doing what we're doing, you know, jumping out of helicopters to something that's less interesting to people that are wired a certain way.
Especially if your body's still online. That's I don't care what time period you're in the military, man, that's a hard thing to do.
Yeah.
And 6 years is just enough time to make it a difficult process.
Yeah. Yeah. So I had that adventure gap and came home one day and...
Well, we had, we graduated and then had babies.
We did.
And then, and then he came home. Go ahead.
And said, hey, I'm going to climb the highest peaks on the seven continents. Not many people have done it. And she's like, awesome.
So what got you, what spun you up about that?
Well, being in the Pacific Northwest, you got Rainier there, the Cascades.
Yeah.
So I was out hiking and like you said, with your body, I let mine go. Like I've never been like not fit, but you know, we're all relatively, you know, we know our fitness level. I was riding my bike up a hill and stopped a dry heave. And I'm like, no, that's not me. I'm not, I need to do something. So climb the highest peaks on the seven continents.
Yeah. But I mean, all right. So you come home and deliver that one. What was your first one? What would you want to tackle first?
So it's tough because it's opportunistic. I was planning to do one a year, but you have the northern and southern hemispheres. So you got to be opposite time zones anyways. So it kind of worked out. I think it was like 4 or 5 years doing it all. But first one was Denali and didn't summit, got within 1,000 feet.
What kept you down?
We were pinned down at 17,000 feet for... almost a week.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, 60 mile an hour winds. One guy, not in our team, but he went through our camp. We tried to talk him out of it. He got blown off. They still haven't found him. On our summit attempt, we went up and it was more of a recovery looking for him. C-130s with infrared.
He's still up there?
Yep.
Yeah.
So you make good choices. Come back down. Mountain's always there.
Yeah, roger that.
But that's, as that a goal like setter.
Something a guide would say. An experienced climber.
But... that was my first of this, you know, pretty hellacious goal. I could have just, you know, got rid of it at that point. Like, oh, yeah, well, I didn't do that. I don't want to go back. I have went back twice, snowboarded it once, still have never stood on top. So that's kind of part of my story. Of
some the only one you got left?
Yeah.
Or not left. Cause
yeah. And that's my choice, right? I could continue just going after something that's as silly as climbing to a top of a mountain and coming back down. You know, if you simplify it and die trying, or maybe that's a part of my story, you know, and I know my figuring out my journey is a lot different than the journey that God had for me, has for me. And that all came together on Everest.
Well, let's talk about that.
All right.
How'd you start getting ready for Everest?
Yeah, it's definitely a lifestyle. So because I have like 4,000, 5,000.
Yeah. So if anybody says, I kind of want to get in, my brother's always getting me. He's like, hey, when we turn 50, we're climbing Everest. And we have to push it a couple of years now, but he's real adamant about that.
Yeah.
What is that even? Cause to me, I'd be like, all right, I'll just go wake up in the morning and start getting ready. I mean, what do you even do?
It's not something you just wake up and
don't
get
do
ready
that.
For.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's what I thought.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Yeah. I mean, even talk to Don Mann. I mean, he attempted it and didn't make it very far, had the high altitude issues. It is a lifestyle, though. I mean, it's not something you just... Actually, do you have any mountains around here?
No.
Yeah, so that's going to be a challenge. You can't really plan for getting up in the death zone, right, you know, above 26,000 feet, but you can train for the things within your control. So your fitness, your, you know, the techniques, all the technical stuff, and there's plenty of it. But you want to definitely do that on something like Rainier. You got crevasse rescue, you're working with the ropes, you know, just living in the mountains, you know, it's a suffer fest. Not trying to talk you out of it.
No, I completely understand what you're saying.
We are already talking. He's out of it. There's no way.
That's just going to make him want to do it. No, you got to encourage him.
That's both feet down. There's no way I'm letting him do that.
Well, at least go to base camp.
Yeah, he can go to base camp.
In fact,
well, now you know how that works, because once you get to base camp, you're like, oh, I mean, I'm already here.
Do you know Darren Isham?
I don't know him.
Okay, he's Dev Guru. He's retired now, but he wants to go there and film it. Wanted me to go. I think be a perfect opportunity.
I was going to say, man, you putting a team together?
Do or don't?
You can film his brother Morgan.
Yeah, I bet there's a bunch of team guys that would do it. Yeah. Especially if you guys got a team guy or a team of team guys.
Yeah.
To be.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I'll talk to him.
There.
Most definitely.
Getting it documented.
Yeah. Ain't no telling what'll happen after that then, those freaking guys. All right, so when you first get ready to climb it, you got to call somebody to check in? Do you put a team together to help you?
Yeah, the logistics are crazy. And that's where people can spend a lot of money. You know, I had sponsors, everything, but I also went independent. I didn't go with a big team. I had some Sherpa support. Sherpa are the local people that live in the Himalayas and Tibet. But that was more like cooks at base camp and advanced base camp of it, like 21,000 feet. But yeah, the permits and just all the logistics, it's quite a bit. So fortunately, most of the Everest climbers and guides are out of like the Seattle area or Denver, you know, places in Colorado. So I had a friend who went to my church and he coordinated everything, but I told him I wanted to be independent. Like, I don't want to be a part of a big group.
Which means what?
Means I'm, for the most part, alone on the mountain. I'm not a part
of... No Sherpa, no nothing, or just by yourself?
I had a climbing Sherpa friend who was with me, but we're not connected to each other. So on Everest, in these larger mountains, you actually have fixed lines that are attached to the mountain. So guides, Sherpa, myself, you know, you put in anchor points, ice screws, and tie it off to rock ice. And then I have all my gear, full down suit, harness, multiple points of lock and carabiners connected in, a Jumar. So if I fall, I'm not falling, you know, for 2 miles straight down.
Yeah, check.
Fall to the anchor.
Now, is there one route up Everest, or is there multiple?
There's two main routes. One's out of Tibet, one's in Nepal. And I did the Nepalese. That's where you go through the Khumbu Icefall. It's that river of just flowing seracs, you know, building size blocks of ice. That's where you see the ladders, those cheap aluminum ladders that you cross, got your crampons. And there'll be like five ladders tied together. It's a little sketchy.
That sounds pretty sketch.
Yeah.
What year is this?
I did it in 2011.
Okay, so you get there, and then out of Nepal, you start in the city and just head up to base camp?
So fly into Kathmandu, and then from there, you take just a small, I forget what type of plane it is, probably the one you're going to buy when you get the lottery.
Big one, bro.
Okay, so a little bit smaller than the one you're going to get. And it's actually the highest, shortest runway, most dangerous airport.
Of course it is.
Right into Lukla. It's on the side of the mountain. You don't even see it coming. And then it's like, well, there it is. You land, or else, you know, you either do or you don't. And then from there, it's 38 miles on foot to get to base camp, which is at 17,500 feet. So base camp it's legit.
That's crazy. Base camp is at 17,000 feet.
Yeah, 3,000 feet higher than Rainier.
So how long do you got to stay in base camp?
So you're acclimating. So like if we're pretty much at sea level here.
Yeah.
If we plucked our bodies, put us on the top in the death zone, there's only a third of the air up there. We'd all pass out and die. It's like if you're flying in an airplane and you lose.
That starts happening at 13, right?
Well, airplanes are usually pressurized around like 8, 9.
Right.
So you'll start feeling it for sure.
Comfort. All right, sure.
And you don't use, I use supplemental oxygen. You don't start using that till you're at about 23,000 feet. But what happens is when you're, and I don't know how high you've climbed in the past.
15, maybe 16.
Okay. So you'd start feeling it for sure.
Yeah.
What happens with the body is, as you get into these oxygen deprived areas, you climb high and then you come back down, you sleep low. That forces your body to produce more red blood cells, which carry oxygen. So that's acclimatizing. So then you go up, go down, and you rest a few days. Good weather window, go up a little higher. And the highest you'll get is 23,000 feet. And you can't acclimate to 26, the death zone.
You just can't, right? That's like a human thing.
Slowly dying. Like if you cut your finger, it won't heal. Like there's not enough air.
That sounds horrible.
All right, so tell me about it. I
wish I'd have talked to you before I went. Man,
sounds like a horrible time.
I mean, I hear people doing this all the time. I usually come down missing a toe or something like that. Yeah. My brother's like, "Hey, we got to climb Everest." I'm like, "No, I. First of all, I don't want to go on top of another mountain again. I mean, I always get my ass kicked.
Marcus,
I get my
like
ass kicked every time I go on top of a mountain.
Mountains.
Yeah.
So you tell me about your climb.
Yeah. So it's a 2-month expedition, and going up and down, climbed a couple 20,000 foot peaks while I was there to acclimate on safer mountains. And then on May 14th, 2011 is when I was at 23,000 feet. So this is on, you actually climb up Lhotse face. Lhotse is the fourth highest mountain in the world. You climb up that to get to High Camp, which is on this saddle. It's called the South Col, to then make an attempt at 29,035 feet Everest. So at Camp 3, this is where you see, you know, it's just a straight up ice wall and the tents are anchored. So if you fall, you're falling for a mile. So you're always on rope, just always super cautious. And everything in at altitude is in slow motion. So it's just one slow step. You know, there's people say, "Oh, you must be such an adrenaline junkie." Well, maybe, but not when I'm mountaineering. And I'm not anyways. I mean, it's all relative, right?
Mm.
Anyone else be like, "Yeah, you are." I'm not. But yeah, during my summit push, May 14th, I was moving up just myself and Pasong, Sherpa, it's my Sherpa friend, and there were 70 mile an hour winds. So it was like every step forward was like two steps back.
Yeah.
So we're just pushing to get to the South Col High Camp to be in a position when the weather would die down for that night to then climb through the night. So in highly glaciated mountains, you climb at night, because once the sun comes up, things become very unstable. When this was part of my story, though, when I got about 1,000 feet above Camp 3, I had to anchor off to get some water. And I have an oxygen mask, I have goggles. And I took my goggles off, put it around my wrist. And as I was getting my mask off so I could drink water, my foot slipped out. I went to grab the rope and my goggles slid off and they're just like down. And you don't bring extra gear on
those
climbs. No.
Okay.
It's, you have to carry everything that you're bringing. So yeah, I do now. FYI. I usually bring sunglasses, but because the band for the strap for the oxygen mask, it pushes out. So it would have damaged my eyes either way. But anyways, the goggles fell down the mountain. And some Sherpa, like 500 feet below, were like waving up at me, and they got my goggles. I mean, it's a miracle, because they would have went for over a mile. Miracle or not, maybe they should have went for a mile, and I should have just got out of there. But so I came off my, you know, put my pack, anchored it, my oxygen, everything. I rappel down, get to them, and the goggles are cracked on the internal lens. So when you have goggles or glasses in the cold, they fog up anyways, because the contrast of the cold outside and the hot breath, mine were fogging and freezing between layers. So I ended up ripping the internal lens out, not realizing that probably cut their effectiveness in half. So continue climbing, got up to 26,000 feet. So the South Col, found Pasong. He was in a tent. He continued up. And that night, a couple people summited. One famous Japanese climber died on the south summit, and the rest retreated. They came down. It's too dangerous. We made our radio calls down to see if the weather was going to be clear. They said, yes, it was. And it went from like 70 mile an hour to nothing. And that's because Everest is up in the jet stream, and that's just kind of how it rolls. 50 mile an hour gusts were going to occur the next day. But the goal is climb through the night, headlamp, get to the top, you know, by sunrise, and then head back down. So it all looked good. We didn't realize at the time we were the only two people climbing to the summit from either side, from Tibet or Nepal.
Really?
It's very rare. Like, you've probably seen pictures of lines.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We had no lines.
So answer this, please, if you don't mind. What makes Everest so dangerous?
There's many objective hazards. There's crevasses that you cross across ladders that you can't even see the bottom. In fact, when we were there, two bodies churned up at base camp that had fallen in up at like 20,000 feet off that five ladder like 20 years ago.
Oh.
That's how glaciers work. Oh, you know, they're just slowly moving, churning. So, I mean, it was, you know, a blessing for their families.
Happens. They get caught in the glacier and it churns them back into the mountain and then eventually it rolls them back out.
Yeah. But there's also just cornices, overhanging ice that breaks loose. Avalanches are kicking off left and right. The Khumbu Icefall, it's 2 miles of just building-sized blocks of ice. Every time, I went through 8 times, every time it was a different route. So you're rerouting ice climbing up and over, rappelling down. Next time there's a ladder straight up. Next time it's across. And then the biggest thing is just the death zone. When you're exposed, like at the summit, it's a literal 2 mile drop on each side of you, you know, like this wide of a space. So if you come off rope, if you push for the summit and you have, you know, high altitude cerebral or pulmonary edema, everything is swelling, just reacting to the altitude, you know, and most accidents actually occur on the way down. You know, you blow your load on the way up, don't have enough to get down. And then if you have freak weather, so fortunately, the weather predicting, the clothes, the just predictability of when you can climb, there's a few days that you can actually summit. You know, it's gotten so much better. If you don't have so many people on the mountain, you know, if you're stuck and not moving, that's not good. If you're moving too fast, you can start sweating, then you slow down, you go hypothermic.
Right.
So it's this game of just like figuring out your body and just, you know, being real and being honest.
Because if there's only a few days to get up there, then there's got to be a lot of people going after that day, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens.
Yeah. And there's only one way up, one way down on each side. So right. It's not like, I don't know. Everest is the tallest mountain, so it gets lots of crap. You know, the news is going to say all kinds of things. I've been all around the world. I've seen a lot grosser mountains, seen a lot worse scenarios, but the spotlight goes on Everest.
How many people has she claimed?
There's over 300 bodies still on the mountain.
So talking about the night you were going up, you said you and the Sherpa are the only ones going up. Why is that?
Just the weather window. So the next couple days behind us, it was going to be even more clear. But when we were at base camp, so you have to get like a 5-day weather window when you're down at base camp, because it takes that long to get in position to go for the summit. And everything looked like it would be calm, and it was. It was like super calm. So that worked out. Getting up to high camp was a lot of work. We just had to get up and down before the 50-mile-an-hour gusts came through. So it's about timing. One is to sometimes beat the crowd. So, you know, I had a friend who was a day behind me. You know, he wasn't feeling well, so he wanted to rest an extra day. So, yeah, it's just, you know, you live and die by the decisions you make in a lot of things in life, but specifically on the mountains, and use the information you have at that time. You know, usually it's within a 3-foot reach.
Does that feel eerie though, going up without anybody else going? Mm-hmm. When normally, like, I mean, I know I've seen pictures of like the headlamps going mm-hmm. up. So I don't know. Does that?
So no, like I'm very much used to soloing things. In fact, my job in the military was unique in that we jump from the helicopter. We're one-on-one, one-to-many. So it's one of the jobs where we do actually act alone. You have the crew in the helicopter and stuff. But so I think there's part of that. And then I train by myself a lot. I've soloed the highest peak in the southern and northern hemisphere and most of the mountains in the Cascades. And so I'm very comfortable alone.
Mm-hmm.
I did have Fasong with me as we were going up though. I was inching ahead of him, and I got to the balcony at the halfway point at 27,500 feet. And I waited an hour, and he's a strong young guy. He had summited a few times before in the past years. And once he got there, He's like, I'm not feeling good. And he said he ran out of water. So I gave him some water and he threw up. I'm like, at that point, I thought we were turning around. And I said, we need to go down. He's like, no. He's like, I'm okay. I ran out of water. I'm dehydrated. So he like pounded the water. We continued up. And at about 28.
It doesn't freeze from the pass from the bottle to the.
It will.
It will, right?
Yeah, yeah. So you have boiling water walking out of the tent.
Right.
And it's in like a cozy type thing. I have a down suit. It's like wedged, you know, within layers. I'll keep everything like close to my body. So my at least 98.6 is, you know, keeping it at room temperature.
You're not camelbacking it.
No. Even on Rainier, like the tube will freeze itself. But yeah, it makes for a nice slushy after a while.
Right.
But yeah, I've been on mountains at the top, like you're even high on Denali and down in Antarctica, and it's a block of ice when you get there. It's like, I'm glad I carried that.
My gosh.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com. That's abilitychiro.com.
Time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
So the name of your book, Blind Descent, tell me about.
Yep.
What happened?
So at 28,000 feet, it starts becoming a little more technical. It's a rock climb at 28,000 feet. So on sea level, it'd be whatever. You just run up it. Up there, you're wedging a single point of your crampon, jumaring up a rope. But right at the base of that, Basong said, I'm going to go back to the balcony. He's like, you should continue up. I'm going to leave an extra oxygen bottle here. And it was at that time that I had the conversation because, again, you live and die by these conversations. But I thought about things like, how was I doing? I felt strong. The weather was good. Most importantly, could Basong get down? He said he could. He said he was going to wait like right there. He ended up going all the way down to high camp, which he needed to do. So it's fine. But I didn't know at the time. Left an oxygen bottle. He turned away. I continued up. So at that point, I'm the only person climbing towards the summit of Everest.
Yeah, bro. What if you don't want to get back? I mean, I guess it's just straight down, right? On the ropes there.
Yep. That's
pretty gnarly doing that by yourself, man.
If there weren't fixed lines, I wouldn't have done it. The other thing is they don't clean up the ropes. So you got to make sure you're in the right one because it's like dreadlocks from death zone up just because you can't clean that stuff up. So you could snap into a brittle one and it's game over.
But okay.
Wasn't the case. So I continue up. I look out to my left and there's the sun rising from my right, casting that perfect pyramid shadow. If you've ever seen that when you're in the mountains, it's amazing on the highest peaks in the world, Himalayas. When you climb any mountains at night, the sun is your first indication of hope. You should be close to the top. Otherwise it's just headlamp, one step in front of the other. Got up to the south summit. You actually drop down. There's this area called a Cornice Traverse. It's this overhanging ice. That's where it's a 2-mile drop, literally on your left into Nepal and to your right into Tibet. So you have options.
Yeah.
But slowly just make your way across that. And then it's Hillary Step. So a 40-foot rock climb. Usually a point of contention. I was completely alone. Just bounced over that. And then you can actually see the summit And it's a lot. Like, you can see the summit. It might take close to an hour to get there because it's so slow moving. But just the emotion of reaching that point was, you know, I'm still processing it to this day. And then eventually pierced the, you know, my crampons on the summit and just kind of took it in.
How big is it up there?
Like the big as your table.
It is, right?
Gosh.
Yeah, what's that even feel like?
It's a lot. You can see the curvature of the earth because you're at 29,000 feet. But it's tough. It's, if you ever get in these moments where it's like, I know I need to process this right now because I'm only going to be here for a half hour. You can't, you're like almost forcing yourself and your mind is going slow anyways. I got some water, got a snack, and I didn't know at the time, but according to the Himalayan database, I'm one of two people that have ever had the summit to myself on a given day.
Really?
Wow.
So I wasn't attempting to do that. It's just life happens.
God thing hooking you up.
Yep. Thanks, God.
Is there anything up there?
Lots of prayer flags and like scarves and some memorabilia, but not a ton. There was some like bags of extra rope, like these big yellow bags that are kind of anchored down. But took the highest selfie, and I made a radio call, like wanted to share it with someone.
Yeah.
So I call him, like, this is Brian.
That was going to be my next question. I was like, man, didn't you feel like you want to share that with somebody?
I know, it is. Well, usually I have a sat phone, and I'll call Joanna from the summits. I've done that all around the world.
All the other summits.
But I didn't have a sat phone that time. Like, it never came in the mail.
It never came, and it was so hard to say goodbye with knowing that he didn't have a sat phone.
Mm. Yeah, so I made a radio call, said, this is Brian checking in from the summit of Everest. And it's all in the same frequency. Everyone comes to life, just all pumped. And my friend who is down at Camp 3 gets on. He's like, congratulations. He's like, you know, you and Pasong, be careful on the way down. And at that moment, I realized, oh, no one knows I'm alone. So I'm like, that's cool. But Pasong went down over an hour ago. He's like, you're alone? I'm like, yeah. He's like, all right, please be careful. I'm like, all right. He turned to Lhokpa Sherpa, who he was climbing with. Strong guy, had been climbing with him for the last month as well. He had five summits. He asked, how long is it going to take Brian to get down to high camp? He's like, oh, Brian, it'll take him 2-3 hours. And no one would hear from me for 7. So I took my last pictures, got some water, and can't stay up there forever. And I started heading down, you know, gravity on my side, sort of. Just moving down, and about 10 feet into it, everything just went completely white. And I went snowblind. And I remember at that moment, dropping down, grabbing the rope, and assessing the situation. Just thinking, I'm at the highest point in the world. I'm completely blind. No one's coming to get me. And without overthinking it, without panicking, I just stood up and started moving. Just one slow step. And I tried so hard to use my eyes. Like it, you ever been snowblind?
No.
So I don't recommend it. It usually takes 24 hours to return. I wouldn't regain mine for a month and a half. It was very severe, having blue eyes, more susceptible, having the cracked goggles, and just being in the death zone. As soon as the sun banks off the ice, it fries the cornea. And yeah, it was very severe. It feels like if you break potato chips, put them in your eyelids.
Okay.
It's kind of like,
oh, it's the pain that goes with it.
Sounds horrible.
I mean. Yeah, that sucks. But just kept moving. I was using my other senses. I could hear the 50-mile-an-hour gusts coming over the ridge. And I remember just hunkering down, and it was taking me forever. But the entire time, I never once felt alone. It's like if you're in the room right now, you close your eyes, you know I'm here, even if you don't say anything. I didn't think too much about it, but I just felt this peaceful presence every step of the way. I got to the top of Hillary Step, 40-foot rock climb, reversed my gear, went to rappel down and just kind of slipped out, pendulumed, hit the wall. I remember landing on this ice shelf and assessing, like, am I broken? Like, just feeling around, like, I think I'm okay. And next thing was that Cornice Traverse, a 2-mile drop. That's when I could really hear the 50-mile-an-hour gusts. And because of the angle of the anchor points, if you have your full body weight on the, you know, if you're pulling that carabiner on the anchor, it's like doing a 300-pound pull-up, trying to get yourself back up. So you're really using your hands, touching once you get close, clip in, clip out, always 2 points of contact. So just very slow moving. I'd hear the wind coming. I would just hunker down, let the wind go over my body, get up, take one more step. And just, I just never felt alone. I was like, I remember like my mouth was so dry.
I'm going to drink some water right now. And just think
yeah. Thanks, me too. And it's such a, it's so tough because I still had my goggles on. I still had my mask. So I had to like go through that whole system. I had a hot thermos that I was drinking from. And then I would just move a little more. I got to the top of the south summit. You actually have to climb back up, which is kind of humiliating and a bummer. But if you fall going up, you fall up. So that's kind of a bonus. Got to the top, slipped off, and it was just head over heels. It was the scariest thing even to this day, falling. It's like if you go to your roof, close your eyes, and jump off.
Oh, I've fallen down a mountain. I know what that feels like.
I know you have.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it's that helpless.
It sucks.
Feeling, it definitely sucks. The rope shock loaded, and it saved me. I would have went for over a mile, but I was upside down. My mask is ripped from my face. My oxygen bottle's coming out of my pack, and my heart is just racing. It's just, I had to right myself for one, slow my breathing, and just calm myself. And from there, there's a, I side traversed over to the rock area where I was, where I needed to be, and a slab avalanche kicked off. So that's, slab avalanche is very, very common where a thick part of the ice is on top of a thinner part. And once the sun comes up, it'll just like release.
Oh, okay.
And I remember immediately grabbing the line with my hand, and it cut straight through my glove. And I remember feeling that, but I stopped myself. But even that, it's a simple action. My heart was just like ripping out of my chest. I just like slow my breathing. You know, it's everything, you know, we learn in training.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
Got down, almost walked right past where Pasong had left the extra oxygen bottle. And it was just like this bright orange. So with snow blindness, everything is bright white. If you put a light bulb in front of your face, you can move your finger in front of it. No, you'll know something just moved. There's no way you can focus. It's bright white, not like black where blind is black. And it was just like this bright orange thing. And I knew I was going to be out soon. Supplemental, so it just mixes with the outside air. If you're 100% scuba tanks, you would die if you came off. So I lay down next to it, fumble around with my regulator. It wouldn't work. So I don't know what was up. I put my other one back together. I don't know why to this day, but I grabbed that extra 15 pounds and put it in my pack and just started making my way down this ridge. Got to the balcony, called out for Pasong, and he wasn't there.
Do you have your radio on you?
Yeah, but there's a dead zone, bad terminology, but the radios don't work basically from the summit down to, and I had twisted the frequency.
Oh, check.
And honestly, I wouldn't want anyone risking their lives to come get me. Like, it wasn't necessarily an option, but you know, this I put myself in this place. I can't imagine. I got to that balcony, and I remember being happy at this point. I got through the really technical stuff. It was like 20 pitches of rappel. I'm like, I can do this. And I reverse my gear, start rappelling down, and about 20 feet into it, my mask just sucks into my face. And I remember just ripping it off and just dropping to my knees. If you're on supplemental oxygen, if you come off, there's a high chance you're going to die. You can't breathe. But at that moment, it had been 33 hours from the day prior to this point, completely blind. I'd already lost 20 pounds, black eyes, tried so hard to do it on my own. And I just reached a point that I couldn't. And I remember I prayed a simple prayer, God, I can't do this alone. Please help. And around the world, Joanna was woken up and just felt an urge to pray for me. A good friend, same thing. People I didn't even know that knew I was climbing, they reached out, you know, months later. I don't know what you were doing at this point, but I know I needed to pray for you. And at that very moment, I just witnessed a miracle. It was like someone reached down and picked me up. It was like this unexplained energy. The first thing I did was not overthink it, but just try the extra oxygen bottle. And I remember it started working. And I got like 5 full breaths, just was reeling it in, and it burned. It felt like fire going through my veins. It was painful, like tangibly painful. And again, I didn't want to stay there forever, overthink the situation. I was so focused on take one more step forward, do anything to survive. So just continued heading down, rappelling down. In the last quarter mile, I'm just kind of staring like, where am I? It's just kind of losing it at this point. And out of nowhere, Pasong just hugs me.
Oh, he showed up.
He's like, Brian, you alive? And just never saw him coming.
Where have you been?
he's like apologizing. He's like, I'm so sorry I leave you. And I'm just like, don't worry about it, dude. So went back.
That's a cool story now.
So where were you exactly on the mountain at this point?
This is still up in the death zone. This is it.
Oh, you're in the death
zone. This is high camp. Because I got back to the tent, collapsed, slept for like 15 hours.
So you made it to high camp on your own.
Yeah. He came out the last quarter mile.
Oh my gosh. Did he see you?
Mm-hmm. That's why.
Is that what happened? He was looking for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. He had said that, you know, everyone thought the worst had happened.
Gotcha.
And then next thing, here I come stumbling down the mountain.
My gosh.
That's something straight out of a movie. All right. Then what? You wake up after 15 hours.
And I still had to get down. I'm still up at 26,000 feet. Yeah. Had to get down, Lhotse, get across the ladders. As nothing.
And no one can come get you. It's not like you can fly a helicopter up there to pick somebody up.
Nah. Or
nothing like that. I mean, if you go up there, you got to climb your butt back down.
Yeah, right? Yeah. You know what
you're getting into. Is there a doctor at high camp?
No. If you're at high camp, you're there for a purpose, and it's to go for the summit and get down and minimize your exposure at high camp. You don't stay maybe a couple days at most. I did get to call Joanna when I got to Camp 2. Advanced Base Camp. I had a French-Canadian friend had a sat phone, like, dial this number. She answers, hi, and I'm like, stop.
It's like 1 a.m. for me.
You know, there's a delay with sat phones. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I soloed the summit and I'm blind. And then the phone cut out.
Oh my gosh.
Of course it did.
And I couldn't get her back until the next day.
It was 24 hours later.
So I own the worst phone call to spouse in history.
Yeah. So at that time it like woke me up. And he was also like very emotional, like bawling, I could tell, and just says, I'm blind.
I wasn't
crying. I solo summited. and then it went dead. And then I was just like, okay, like now what? And I didn't know. Like the next morning I had to wake up, our kids were 4 and 6, and put on a happy face and like, yeah, daddy summited. I don't know what else is going on, you know. And then not knowing, like, will he actually, I didn't know if he was snow blind. I didn't know if he was permanently blind. I had no idea because I didn't know what had happened. So I had to just wait and be patient and pray. And yeah, so 24 hours later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got down to base camp. They had like a cake for me, summit cake. The nice. Sherpa made, I don't know what it's made of. It was pretty nasty. It was cool that they did that. But yeah, I had a line of sight, like 3G. Phone and talk to Joanna for like an hour, and just I don't know, it would be interesting if we had recorded that. Lots of tears and love and just
amazing.
It's tough, but yeah, still had 38 miles to get out and then get back around the world to get home.
Still had to go through the Khumbu ice falls, which is highly dangerous as well.
Yeah, I was crawling across ladders and, yeah, but I had Pasong was with me, so I mean that was good. I almost stepped right into a crevasse. A guy ran over and like, because I'm just like walking. There's like snow bridges that you just pop right through, and it's like hundreds of feet.
Gosh.
So when did that start to wear off?
So my right eye came back sooner, but I mean, it's never fully gotten, I've had LASIK and stuff.
That's going to be my next question. Yeah, I was like, what'd it do?
It accelerated, you know, the doctors were like, oh, it's just because you're getting older. I'm like, yeah, I'm not buying it. Cause and effect.
Yeah, I've heard that before.
Yep.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
So you got your right eye back. Where were you at when that when you started getting sight back?
I might have been somewhere in like Thailand. It was tough. I was bumping into everyone.
Oh, because you were on your way home. Yeah. You had to like get
and I was by myself, then, like going through these airports and walking through Thailand. And it was a layover before I got back to Taipei and then to Seattle. But yeah, it was just, it was like, you know, if you blur your eyes really bad, that would be like my good eye.
Yeah.
And then my left. And like even on the... That's my pick on the cover of the book.
That's a selfie pick.
That's a selfie pick. I can tell like my left eye is completely already gone. I didn't even realize at that point. You know, now I look at pictures and it's disturbing. But yeah, you know, you get back and I know you're familiar with this.
How long did it take you to get back?
It takes like maybe 5 days.
So another week almost.
Yeah. But everyone loves a survival story. They could care less about the survivor. Yeah. I hadn't even began to process what I had been through and that trauma. And you have Fox News and like, you know, bright lights everywhere. I'm still blind. I'm on stage weeping, you know, and it's, they've wanted to make a movie since day one. Like I'm not healthy enough to even consider it. So I wrote a book.
Oh, well, guess what's coming next?
Yeah.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
No, I know. Yeah. Yeah, they're.
Yeah, now
screenwriting is supposed to start.
Yeah, now. Soon. But back then, they just wanted to add all this drama to it. And like now we're with the right people who are like,
yeah,
we're gonna, you guys are gonna, death, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like when you, especially when you go into the void and you, you taste that and then the way you crawl back from it.
Well, even watching, we watched Lone Survivor the other couple days ago with our son and everything. It's those moments or Captain Phillips, right? There's that one moment that still triggers. That one moment when you know you're finally alive, that you're rescued, and that I'll lose it over those moments.
You remember yours? Exactly. Was it when Hassan showed up?
It was.
It was, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because at that point, I thought I might have died because I was looking around. I'm like, did
hey,
I
you don't
die?
Know.
Yeah.
I mean, that could be heaven or hell. They stick you right exactly where you died. And you're like, all right, get out of here.
Right.
I remember that when I heard my name for the first time. Someone yelled my name. That's when I was like, whoa.
So both of you, it was because you weren't alone. It's that moment of being comforted by someone else. Even though you feel like you're in perfect solitude, like when you are alone, that's your comfort. But
because I kept saying too, I was like, I'm pretty sure I'm supposed to be dead. I mean, and it was beautiful. And I had this quiet calm. Like there's this real calm piece like you're talking about. Mm-hmm. That's real. I had that too. And then those other moments, and Showman shows up, and you hear my name. I don't know, like he called out to you, the same thing. I
was yeah,
like,
Brian, you're alive.
Yeah, yeah. That's when I started feeling stuff again.
Yeah.
I remember that too.
Yeah, it's powerful. But
we need you, man, to tell those stories. That's why God put you in that spot. Yeah. And then you manned up and got through that, and that is inspirational. I mean, from the highest peak on the freaking planet, bro.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. And it sucks because when you're, as you know, you're dealing with it and you're on stage and you're reliving it every single day. Like it's been almost 14 years and I'm still emotional and that's just how it is. And you know, with survivor's guilt, it's why am I here? Why is there 300 bodies up there? And even in my talks, motivational talks, it really comes down to faith and focus. Focus is unique because I couldn't see a thing, but military training, I knew what I needed to do to survive. I knew within 100% I was not going to live. If I start thinking about that, I'm already dead. I had to find a way to survive one more step forward. And I tried to do it on my own this entire time. This is the first time in my life. I know I've had miracles. I've never given God credit. That whole time, Jesus is walking alongside me. I felt that presence. He's like, yeah, keep crying. You know, do it on your own, dummy. And then I reached a point I couldn't. He's like, I've been here the whole time. I prayed to him. Power of prayer lifted me up. I witnessed a miracle, and I wouldn't be here otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you're out there by yourself all alone, it's just you and him. If you don't know that, it's terrifying.
Yeah, can't imagine.
You know what I'm talking about?
But your wife's back home praying for you too. So, yeah. I mean, her lifting you up kept you alive.
And the survivor's guilt thing, I was kind of running into that too until somebody told me, like, hey, man, they were the good ones. God pulled them out of here on purpose. I was like, they're better than you.
Yeah. Amen.
And I'm the kind of guy that I was like, they were badass guys too, man. Yeah, no wonder. They were better than me. I'm stuck in here still freaking trying to figure it out.
I know, they're there.
Just, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get it.
When they told me like that, I was like, oh, I can get to that. Yep. I can understand that. I can stay in here doing some suffering until I square myself away. For sure, man.
Yeah.
That was definitely a good way to look at it.
How did you handle it?
Gosh, only through prayer. Thankfully, at the same time that when he started climbing, the kids were 3 and 5. So for Alaska, and our church started doing a 60-60 challenge. So for every 60 minutes for 60 days, you pray. And so it kind of got you into that pattern of connecting with God hourly. And so it happened to line up when he started climbing for the first of the 7 summits. And that really helped because I struggle with anxiety and fear. And so just praying and God giving me peace, I was like, okay, I can do this. Like, I'm not alone in this. And then by the time he got to Everest, actually our church ended up doing it again as another. It just happened to line up. And so it was God, obviously, because he knew what I needed. And so, again, I had that habit of hourly prayer, and that was just really how I got through it. It's only through him giving me peace and just the power of prayer. And then also, of course, it comes back to that too, and finding out that's also like prayer is what lifted him up at that time too. And that was the same timing, and it wasn't just me praying either. It was like so many people that we were told later, or like reached out and said, hey, I felt the urge to pray for Brian like last night. What, you know, something going on? Have you heard anything? I'm like, no, I haven't heard anything, but I feel peace now. So I don't know, like, must be good. Like, I don't know. So, and then when we found out, it was like, oh my goodness, that's just amazing.
Right? Wow. So
it's nice when you have something tangible like that. Cause it's like, you can't deny that.
Yeah.
That God exists. Oh, yeah.
You got the keyboard warriors out there you're, you know, search and rescue, whatever, military, don't give it to God. Like,
what?
I would love to, but I can't. I was there, you weren't. And this is, I wouldn't be here otherwise.
Keyboard courage, man.
Yep.
Yeah. What the...
I love those guys. Those bots.
Yeah.
Marcus doesn't even look at them.
No.
I mean, they're...
At all.
I don't either. My mom used to go after people on Amazon. I'm like, mom, stop. Like, it's okay. I appreciate it.
You're right. That's how I used to be. And Marcus got mad at me. He was like, do not
like,
give
if I'm
them.
Not doing
don't
it, why would you?
Yeah. Don't engage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's
don't like,
there's nothing healthy about that.
Yeah. Don't even give them energy.
It can go the other way because you can get built up so much from that. And then you get a big head, everything else. And that's not where God wants us to be.
Yeah.
Inspiring people, man. Okay. So when'd you go back up?
Up what?
Did you go any mountain?
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. So after my eyesight came back, I actually led a group up on Rainier because being at home wasn't doing
Hometown
it.
Hometown mountain, right?
Yeah. So just to get back out and see, you know, am I ever going to climb again? I actually ran into a whiteout, had to turn everyone around at like 13,000 feet, got us down. But just being out there, that was scary. That kind of brought me back and triggered me, but I got us through it. But being out there is what I needed.
Yeah.
So later that year, I went down to Antarctica, climbed the highest peak down there, negative 70 on the summit.
Bro.
That just sounds so terrible. I mean, none of like that fun, sounds man. Enjoyable.
That's how you know there's different humans down here. Man, dude, that doesn't even sound like a good time to me.
You got all the gear. It's fine.
I mean, I'm all about getting Gucci gear. I mean, I'll do some stupid stuff if you're going to give me some gear for it. But I don't know about that one, man.
Sounds so awful.
No, it's amazing down there. Antarctica, it's awesome.
My little sister just went there for her honeymoon.
She went or is going to?
She went.
Oh, nice.
Wow.
Yeah.
She right? goes see That's the Emperor went, Penguins. Right? And, yeah. Neat.
Yeah.
Wow. She took a cruise, right?
Yeah, they did a cruise to Antarctica.
I was going to say, there's not many opportunities unless you're a researcher.
Yeah.
Yeah, she did or on a cruise ship and they go right there.
Yeah, she did a cruise.
Yeah. If you're there, you're there for a purpose. Like there, Nat Geo was there, I think. Nat Geo was filming Frozen Planet.
I don't know if you've seen that.
So we were watching like the raw footage and with them. It was... Yeah, you're
That's
there for a
crazy.
Reason.
So what do you got coming up?
I don't know.
They're doing a movie, right?
Yeah, they're looking to do a movie for Blind Descent.
Are you involved for that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I want to talk to you offline on that since you've had that experience.
We can help you with that, man.
So are you speaking a lot?
Mm-hmm.
Do you enjoy it?
Yeah. No, I do. I mean, I don't enjoy going down that path, but I see the results and the conversations that we have with individuals that have had near-death experiences or just, you know, climbing their Everest, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. You know, I never try to make this about me. This is, if it's about me, then I've failed. I've failed Jesus. This is, mm-hmm. I'm here because of him.
Oh, you're testifying.
Testify.
Yeah, check.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because there's a difference.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, good on you for doing that, man.
What are your favorite mountains you've climbed?
I don't know. They're all so unique. So just in Washington State, in the Cascades, like North Cascades, there's so many just amazing peaks. And it sucks because it can be addicting because you get up on top of one and you're like, oh, that one. And then you get up on that one. You're like, oh, that one. So, you know, I have to be disciplined. I am 50 and my body's pretty broken from the military, from, you know, just living life to its fullest.
From being blind on Everest.
Being blind.
Mm-hmm. Falling down Everest.
Yeah.
But yeah, just everything, you know, take calculated risks. I mean, I'm still pushing myself. I'm not dead yet. But, you know, we're just very adventurous. We get out and if I need to do something a little higher, Joanna's definitely scared of heights. So we couldn't be more opposite.
Yeah. I was going to say, don't ask.
Are the kids climbing?
I don't climb, but...
They have a pretty impressive portfolio.
Already. Nice.
Yeah. But they're... I'm not the type that pushes them like,
you're
going to go, you know, do this thing, but I create opportunity. They love doing winter camping, like going in 5 miles, getting in a snow cave or, you know, there's no one else
heard
out there.
Such a thing.
He started that when they were little. Every winter they do that. I stay home and stay warm.
I'd be with you.
That's it, man. If you push it on them, it's one thing, but if you go do something and love it, and they kind of, they picked that up, man.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And they, I mean, we were all hiking together from when they were in a pack, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, they grew up hiking, too. And that was just, and so now, like, we're traveling, speaking, and the kids will get together. The kids, they're now 18 and 21. They'll get together on a weekend at home, and they'll go for hikes together. So, like, that's their thing, too. And, so it's kind of cool because it's definitely created a love for the outdoors. And
yeah. But as we get older, you know, the adventure is still there. It's just, we're different.
Oh, yeah, different, yeah.
Just, you know.
Definitely looks
that happens.
Than he used to.
And I think it's important to recognize that because there's so many people that they get out of the military, they've been doing that, ready to jump on a grenade, and now you're out.
Yeah.
You know, you're not prepared to be out. Same in the workforce.
Yeah.
You work till you're 65, and then...
Then what?
I don't know what I'm going to do. You got to retire today.
Retirement like and dying is two different things.
So are you still working? Do you still do like the tech stuff at all? Or?
No, I stepped away from that actually recently. There's opportunity like this year. So we'll see where that goes. But I had so many speaking opportunities.
That's good.
And yeah. And with the movie, I have a third book. My first, kind of like Chad Robichaux, my first fiction. Thriller.
Nice.
Oh, good.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So that'll be coming out. So yeah.
So how can people follow you, look you up, and?
Well, I'm definitely on the Google. Just look for Brian Dickinson. My website's briandickinson.net. I host Common the Chaos podcast, so that's where I'm interviewing aviation rescue swimmers, these untold stories back from like the Apollo 13 recovery to HAL 3 Vietnam to current. So just weekly episodes there. And yeah.
Very cool. Well, thank you for coming all the way out here sharing your story. That's amazing.
It was a blessing to meet y'all for sure.
Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate you having us.
Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details. On the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.